This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky, August 2013. At least we don't have to wait up quite so long at night for it to get dark. And when it does so, we have one of the most beautiful regions of the sky over there and fairly high in the south. Vega, the star in Lyra the Lyre. Deneb, the bright star in Cygnus the Swan. And Altair in Aquila, below the two. Those three bright stars making up what's called the Summer Triangle. If you take binoculars and gradually work your way up from Altair to Vega, about a third of the way, there's a fairly dark part of the Milky Way called the Cygnus Rift, and against that you might spot what's called the coat hanger. It's an upside down, almost like a wire coat hanger. That's the thing to look for. I've also included in the highlights of the month a couple of other nice things to see in this region. There's the Ring Nebula in Lyra and also the Dumbbell Nebula in Vulpecula, which is below Cygnus. And these are both what are called planetary nebula because some of them look a little bit like small planets. The Ring Nebula is very small. You'd actually need to have a telescope to see that it really was a little smoke ring in the sky. But the Dumbbell Nebula is quite big, and on a dark, transparent night, you should be able to see it just using binoculars, as I certainly have done in the past. As the night moves on, Pegasus is rising, and up to the left of Pegasus is the constellation of Andromeda. And here we can begin to see, this time around, the rather beautiful great nebula in Andromeda, M31, the Andromeda Galaxy. And I'll say more about that in the next couple of months. High overhead, you can actually see Cassiopeia and Ursa Major, and they obviously are in the region of the North Star Polaris. Well, what about the planets? Well, it's not a great month for planets. They're all visible, actually, but they're all rather low in the sky. Let's start with Jupiter, the giant planet. It rises about 3:30 BST in the morning, and so is visible in the pre-dawn sky, shining at magnitude minus 1.9. Its disk is currently about 33 arc seconds across. It will still only be, though, 20 degrees above the horizon, some 45 minutes before sunrise. So you may well need to use binoculars to pick it out well, but obviously please cease using them when the sun has risen. Following its conjunction with Mars on the 22nd of July, it will still lie within 5 degrees of Mars at the beginning of the month, but then gradually moves away. By the end of August, Jupiter rises some 3 to 4 hours before the Sun, lying between the feet of the heavenly twins, Gemini, and so will be far easier to spot. And then a small telescope shall be able to image the 4 Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. So that's a morning object. What about Saturn? Well, that's visible just after sunset. It lies in Virgo. It's several months past opposition, so really will be in the southwest after sunset, 11 degrees to the left of Spica, Alpha Virginis in Virgo. It actually will appear slightly brighter with a yellowish hue. Its magnitude remains pretty much constant at plus 0.7 during the month, whilst its angular size drops a little from 16.7 to 16.2 arc seconds. As August begins, it's just 1 degree away from the plus 4.2 magnitude star Kappa Virginis. It actually moves eastward fairly quickly and will go from Spica towards Alpha Librae in Libra. The rings are about 17 degrees from the line of sight, and we're now looking at the planet's southern hemisphere. Much of the northern hemisphere will be hidden by the rings. Sadly, it's at fairly low elevation, but a small scope may well be able to spot Saturn's largest moon, Titan, and just possibly Cassini's division within the rings if the seeing is particularly good. Moving back to the morning, we have Mars. It's in Gemini, but moving quickly across the sky, moves into Cancer on August the 25th. It should lie about 15 degrees above the northeastern horizon, 45 minutes before sunrise as the month begins, and so binoculars should be able to pick it up, but again, stop using them at sunrise. The magnitude of plus 1.6 remains constant during the month, and the angular size of just 4 arc seconds will really not allow any markings to be seen on its salmon pink surface. Mercury is also in the morning sky. At the end of July, it was at western elongation. It brightens during the month from minus 0.5 to minus 0.8 magnitudes, but at the same time, sadly, it moves back toward the horizon, making it harder to spot. It will be lost in view from the middle of the month as it moves towards what is called superior conjunction, that is on the far side of the Sun, on August the 24th. Interestingly, Mercury passes 4 degrees below comet Ison on the 8th, which is expected to be at about magnitude 13, so not easy to observe. But when they next come together, on November the 23rd, with a separation of just 4.7 degrees, they could have a comparable brightness. Back to another evening planet, Venus. It starts the month 32 degrees east of the Sun at sunset, and you think that would make it pretty easy to see, but the trouble is the plane of the ecliptic is at quite a shallow angle to the horizon at this time of year in the evening. It will only be about 11 degrees above the horizon. Its angular separation increases steadily to 39 degrees through the month, but at the same time, the angle between the horizon and the ecliptic reduces, so its elevation after sunset stays pretty much the same in magnitude, from -4 to -3.9 during the month, whilst its angular size increases from 12.8 to 14.2 arc seconds. Sadly, you don't really see any details on the surface. You can just see the phase, that is, the part of the surface that's illuminated by the Sun. It's moving rather rapidly across the sky, from Leo into Virgo, and ends August just 5 degrees from Spica, Alpha Virginis. Finally, what about some highlights of the month? Well, perhaps one of the real highlights of August is the Perseid meteor shower, one of the best that we can see every year. You don't really want any moon in the sky because the moon's brightness will actually make it harder to see the fainter meteors. Well, happily this year, in fact, the moon will not be any problem at all. It'll be well seen on the morning hours, perhaps from midnight onwards on the 13th. But happily, the peak of the shower is fairly broad, so we have a good chance, and now we have at least 2 occasions when we have a chance to see them. The meteors are caused by debris left by the comet Swift Tuttle as it goes around the Sun. On August the 9th, Venus will lie above a very thin, waxing crescent moon, so about 30 minutes or so after sunset, given a low western horizon. A nice thing to do when there's a thin crescent moon is to see if you can spot what is called Earthshine, the part of the moon that's dark but illuminated by reflected light from clouds on the Earth's surface. It's actually a good month to observe Neptune with a small telescope. It comes into opposition when it's roughly nearest to the Earth on the 27th of August. It'll be well seen both this month and next, and I've put a chart in the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website to show you where to find it. Its magnitude is plus 7.9, so in fact binoculars will easily pick it up if you know, of course, where to look. And it will rise to an elevation of about 27 degrees when due south, which isn't too bad. If you've got a telescope of 8 inches or more in aperture, and you have a dark, transparent night, no moon, then it's even possible to spot its largest moon, which is called Triton. I've never seen Triton, and that's my main objective later this month, to see if I can spot it. I mentioned Comet Ison earlier on. Towards the end of the month, it does become possibly visible at a magnitude of about plus 12, but it could actually be less than that at the moment. On the 31st the very last day of the month, it will lie just a couple of degrees above the Beehive Cluster M44 in Cancer. So that makes it a fairly easy thing to find. You'll need a telescope of reasonable size, and as I say, you need a dark and transparent sky. We hope Comet Ison will become a magnificent comet over the next few months after that, and around the end of November to the middle of December are going to be about the best times to see it. It could be very exciting, and we'll keep you posted on these pages about its progress. So, a bit more time to observe the sky. Do enjoy it.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now John Field tells us what you can see in the Southern Hemisphere night sky during August.
Kia ora and welcome to the August Jodcast from Carter Observatory. After sunset, planets Venus and Saturn, along with the constellations of Virgo and Corvus, can be seen in the west. Venus appears as a brilliant evening star near the western horizon. Saturn is much higher, appearing as a yellow star-like object in an otherwise sparse sky. Small telescopes will reveal the planet's rings and the planet's largest moon, Titan. More powerful telescopes should reveal faint banding in the planet's atmosphere, along with gaps and variation in colour of the rings. This object, more than any other, will get a great response from first-time observers. One of the reasons for this, I feel, is that the planet actually looks like what it does in pictures. Other objects tend to look less colourful than in photographs, and this tends to lead to initial disappointment. Jupiter, the largest planet in the solar system, is in our morning sky, along with Mars and, at the start of the month, Mercury. They will rise in the twilight, making a nice trio of objects, with Jupiter rising first, followed by Mars and then Mercury. Mercury, however, will quickly move towards the Sun and be lost. Jupiter and Mars will continue to rise earlier each morning, but they will remain in twilight for the rest of the month. They will also separate as the month progresses. The two brightest stars in the west after sunset are White Spica, the brightest star in Virgo, and below Arcturus, the brightest star in Beotes, the herdsman. Arcturus is the fourth brightest star in our night sky. It is a red giant, 27 times the diameter of the Sun, and lies 36.7 light-years away. Beaten, Beotes, is called Nakar, from the Arabic word meaning herdsman. It is a yellow giant star, about 219 light-years away. From more southerly locations of Aotearoa, New Zealand, this star is not visible above the horizon. Epsilon Beotes is a lovely double star, consisting of a yellow, giant primary and a bluish-white companion. When using 100 times magnification or greater, they have an appearance that has led to the alternative name Pulcherrima, which means most beautiful. August sees the Milky Way stretching to the east to west across our evening sky. Along this path we find the majority of the bright stars of our night sky. In the north, to the left of the Milky Way, is Vega, the fifth brightest star in the sky. Whilst in the south, Canopus, the second brightest star in the night sky, can be found. Alpha Centauri, the third brightest star in our night sky, along with Beta Centauri, the 11th, are high in the southwest after sunset. Sitting along the Milky Way, these two stars point towards the Southern Cross, the smallest of the 88 official constellations. Scorpius, our winter constellation, sits high overhead, with Orange Antares marking the scorpion's heart. A curve of stars forms the scorpion's body. Following the scorpion is another zodiac constellation, Sagittarius the Archer. When we look away from the path of the Milky Way, the brightness and number of stars rapidly drops off. Sitting about halfway above the southern horizon in the evening is a faint constellation of Tucana, Toucan. Alpha Tucanae is a magnitude 2.8 star, about 200 light-years away. Beta Tucanae is a loose group of six gravitationally bound stars, approximately 140 light-years away. Kappa Tucanae is another multiple system consisting of two binary stars. The two exceptional objects in Toucan are the Small Magellanic Cloud and 47 Tucanae, the second brightest globular cluster in our sky. The SMC is visible to the unaided eye as a cloudy smudge in the sky. Although best viewed from a dark location, it is bright enough to see from many suburban locations as long as the moon is not too bright. It is a dwarf galaxy of several hundred million stars, about 210,000 light-years away. With any small telescope or good binoculars, a number of star clusters can be seen in and around the SMC. Sitting beside the SMC, visible to the eye, is a fuzzy star called 47 Tucanae. It is a globular cluster containing millions of stars. This cluster is a stunning sight in binoculars or telescopes. Observations using the Hubble Space Telescope along with ground-based telescopes have currently failed to find any planets orbiting stars of 47 to Carnot. This lack of planets may be due to the low metallicity of stars in the cluster, but one would still expect there would be some gas giants present. Another globular cluster, Omega Centauri, is well placed for viewing. The brightest globular cluster in the night sky can be seen as a fuzzy star to the north of Beta Centauri. Over the evening, the pointers and Southern Cross turn around a point in the sky called the South Celestial Pole. This point sits overhead if you're at the Southern Pole. As the Earth spins around this point, all the stars in our southern sky rotate around this point in the sky. A number of bright aurora have been visible from the lower North Island and South Island of Aotearoa, New Zealand. We here in Wellington have seen at least four bright aurora, making it one of the better seasons. This activity may continue through into August. Part of the reason for the successful observation of aurora is due to better forecasting and the existence of social media sites that give real-time updates of activity. Late next month, Comet Ison will reappear in our morning sky, and it may give some indication as to how this comet will perform over the upcoming months. Thanks for listening in to our Jobcast, and the team here at Carter Observatory wish you clear skies.